Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
First, I want to say that everything that I'm going to show you this evening is and always has been in plain view. This is the nature of truth. We don't see it. We don't see what it is that's happening. We don't see the dynamic that produces the life we're in. We don't understand the creative life that produces all of that. And then one day, for some reason, we suddenly wake up a little bit. And we say, oh, well, it was right in front of me all the time. What I'm going to tell you about tonight, what I'm going to show you, is right in front of your eyes all the time. But it's not yet seen. The purpose of a talk, of a meeting where men and women gather to discuss what is true, to talk about the light, the purpose of such a meeting is so that individuals, at whatever level they are, maybe if they are willing to receive it, touched by an idea, touched by a certain energy, touched by a certain insight that, just like the seed that it is, settles into that person's mind, into that person's heart. And if the person has love for the truth, then one day that little seed opens up, something pops up inside of the heart, inside of the mind, and they go, oh, that was there all the time. Why didn't I see it? So we're going to talk about things that are yet to be seen. And then we're going to talk about ways in which we as men and women who want to have eyes that see, ears that hear, how we as individuals can begin to work at producing in our lives, within ourselves, the conditions that nourish that seed, that make it possible for new perceptions that by their very nature produce in the human being new relationships, a new understanding of the life that he or she is in the large scheme and in the small scheme. So we start with an interesting point, and it is that, well, how many of you kind of feel like you're being torn apart? To be a human being is to sort of feel torn apart, isn't it? Not every day. Some days you're just torn in one direction. I'll give you a minute to think about it. Pulled here and pulled there. But the fact is that we as spiritually sleeping beings have yet to understand and see for ourselves what only a certain amount of awakening can show us. Only a certain amount of light can reveal. And that is that inside of us, every single human being, is born two great needs. And the problem with these two great needs for the unillumined mind, for the still sleeping mind, is that they're in conflict with one another. As the mind develops, these two things that I'm going to talk to you about are no longer in conflict. But conflict is the effect of living, if you will, in a world of duality, in a world in which it is nothing but opposites bouncing into each other. As we develop, as we grow, we're able to see these things and incorporate them in our being as opposed to being pushed around by them. So here are these two great needs. And I ask you, as always, you look at what I'm talking about while I'm talking about it so you can see whether or not this is true. Here's the first great need. How many of you have a great need for constancy? Something, give me something constant. Something, you know, security. A sense of well-being that doesn't get knocked around. Something constant. How about this? I want something to bank on. Yes or no? I'd like to bank on my husband or my wife. I'd like to bank on my friend. I'd like to bank on... I wish I had some money in the bank. Or whatever it is that one wants to bank on. Constancy. Do you understand? How about a just steady something? We have that need. It's rooted in us. But there's also a need, a great hunger that lives in us for constantly new experiences. So on one hand, I want everything to remain the same. And on the other hand, I don't want anything to remain the same. I want it always new. Now, do you see inside of yourself these two great ewes or rams, as the case may be, slamming their heads on each other. Because one day I'm sitting here and I, you know, God, please just let things settle down. Let it get so it's okay. And then no more does it get okay. I can't stand this. Yes or no? I only wish something would happen, but it's got to be good. Because I don't want constant bad. Yes or no? Yeah, that's the way we are in life. So we have this unbelievable, deep, deep need for constancy in our lives. And we have, on the other hand, this deep need for new experiences, for new relationships, new understandings. And the two run headlong into each other all the time. Now, if you look at, and I ask you to, the root of everything you've ever regretted in your life with other people, where you've, if you'll use it, I will, where you've sold your soul for the approval of something, of someone, where you've lied, flat just lied, turned on somebody behind their back, did something that you knew would cause another person pain because you thought it would resolve your own. And if you look at these moments, which I think are all quite ugly, if you look at them, you'll see that the reason that we did what we did in those moments where we did the good, where we didn't do the good we wanted to do, if we look at that, see, you know, the reason, if we see it, it's because my world had collided. There was a great upheaval, and I needed to do something to get the thing to settle down back to constancy. Yes or no? How many of you can see it? Okay. So if we look at that in our individual lives, and then we look at the large scale, which we have to, because we cannot separate our individual lives from the world that we see at war. We cannot do it. And we mustn't, because if we look closely, what we'll see is that the very same thing that acts in me acts in everyone. And that the first and most foremost power, the thing that's most important to me, is that I have this constancy at the cost of whatever it is, including if I have to, which I don't think to myself at that point that I'm really doing something against somebody. I'm just choosing in favor of myself. And you have enmity between human beings, don't you? You have bitterness, you have gossip, you have all the things that cause resentment, and that trail of tears that follows every human being everywhere they go, where they know in their life, not only has the past proven that there's nothing, that there's nothing constant. You know, the only thing constant in a sleeping human being is their ability to explain their inconstancy. That is the only thing constant in a human being. And I ask you to see it for yourself. I haven't touched on hard stuff yet. I'm just warming up here. You for yourself must see that when push comes to shove, a great, great percentage of the time, it is you who will save your own bacon first. Now, how many of you have the courage to admit it? It's important. We're not condemning each other here. We're looking to see something as a basis, as a fact, to begin understanding what we have to do. Because here's the question. We have this need for constancy. What do you think? Does some cruel God say, here's a great joke I'm going to play on human beings. I'm going to put this unbelievable need that they have for something that is secure and true and constant and uncorruptible. I'm going to put them in them, and then nowhere is it going to be found. That would be some kind of God, huh? Some kind of creator. Well, it's not like that. Yet, we have to ask ourselves, and this is where so many people don't even get started on the true path. Is there a constant intelligence? Is there a constant? See, I hate to ask this. How many of you think that you're constantly intelligent? Please don't say you are. The first sign of intelligence in a human being is the recognition that they're rarely intelligent. And intelligent meaning what? Educated? No. Intelligent enough not to hurt himself or another human being. Intelligent enough not to compromise the world for the sake of something that's taken from you the minute you get it anyway. That's intelligence. Is there a constant love? Is there a constant love? See, I have to slow down and try to get you to understand something. We go through our lives having imagined, because we get angry at situations, that our anger proves our superiority to the situation we're angry over. Anger doesn't prove superiority. Anger proves a lack of resources, a deep limitation in a human being, because the only thing he has to meet the moment with is anger and resistance. And you can't learn if you resist something. So we walk around with these imagined love. Oh, somebody has to walk up to you. Oh, Sherry, you look marvelous, or whatever it is, you know, and it's love. I feel love. If somebody says, I love that when you say I look marvelous. And then we can talk about religion, we can talk about this, we talk about all these things, but here's the point. The minute that you stray off of one thing that I hold to be true, now the problem isn't that I'm loving, not loving. The problem is that you clearly don't know the first thing about love. And therefore, my anger and righteousness is justified toward you, so that my negative state proves to me my love. And a human being who believes that because he or she can judge and feel resentment or negativity towards another human being because they don't love the thing that they love, that human being doesn't know the first thing about love. There's nothing constant in them. And the proof is they'll turn into an animal if they're pushed to it. Is there a constant relationship? Remember, we're talking about, I'm looking for something constant. And why am I looking for something constant? Because if I say it as simple, I'm just tired of being afraid. I'm tired of using people. I'm tired of selling myself for something in order to get something constant. It doesn't turn out to be constant. Then I got to sell myself again. And I'm up to spiritual debt in my ears. I'm looking for something constant. I want to know if there's something constant. So is there a constant relationship? You can't tell me you have a... Here's what we call constant relationship. We vacillate between really hating the person or being angry with them or upset with them and then feel really good about them. But we stay in the relationship, so we call it constant. Now, maybe there is something underneath that that holds it together that's constant. But as most of us know, how very few of us are fortunate enough to go through life and have one person in our life the whole time that we have never turned against. I ask you to look at yourself that way. Never turned against another human being. Can you? There is such a thing, but we're going to look at it. Is there a constant relationship? Because back to the idea of I want a new experience. Is there a constant renewal? Is there something whose renewing qualities are constant? Because that would answer the question too, wouldn't it? If I want constancy, is there something that's constantly renewing itself? Because then it doesn't become an oxymoron anymore, does it? Then it becomes something that's contained in itself, the opposites, working with themselves, no longer in conflict with each other. Is there something that's constantly renewing itself? And these, if you will, I think are the questions that a person who's serious in their spiritual life have to ask. Because without something that is constant that way, no human being can find freedom other than a freedom that is conditioned by what they have said is constant and fight to control to keep it that way. Am I going too fast? Well, take a deep breath anyway. Slow down a little bit. Because if you understand that, and this is true across the board, God, truth, does not put in a human being a true need without having placed in that human being that which will answer that true need. It's impossible. Just as we have a need for water. Imagine if you needed water and there wasn't any. I mean, it didn't even exist. Everybody walked around like that. And they go, what's wrong with you? I don't know. I just can't get over this thing. Another bad joke, wouldn't it? But it doesn't work like that. That's not how it is. that's very funny. So to the point now, because I must move on, is that if we look out at life, if we look at our mothers, our fathers, our friends, brothers, sisters, lovers, husbands, wives, children, businesses, economy, society, even religion itself, in its aberrated forms. If we look at everything, nothing is constant. Nothing. Everything changing. And not only changing in itself, but changing because the whole dynamic of what creates it in the first place is changing. So you have this extraordinary well of change pouring up all the time, and here's a poor person standing over it, figuring out how can I drink from this and have something constant at the same time. And it begs, if a person gets this far in their spiritual life, it begs them to realize that if I'm going to ever be a free man, a free woman, and by free I mean someone who, wherever they are, is doing exactly what they want to do there, no matter what the circumstances or conditions are around them. A free man and free woman is someone who has nothing pulling on them from outside of them, produced by thoughts. Nothing pulling on them. That's a free person. And the reason they're free is because they don't answer what's pulling on them. They don't become identified with it. Therefore, they're not attached. Therefore, they're not afraid of losing what they thought granted them that freedom. This is a free human being. This is what we're... This is. You want to know what you're after? You're after being able to be in this room, to be at home, to be with your husbands, your wives, holding hands, eating dinner, whatever you're doing. And the whole time you're doing it, understanding that where you are, everything that you need is provided for you constantly, just as you need it. That's what freedom is. And there is no other freedom. All other freedoms are conditional. All other freedoms are conditional. So it begs the question, and I think if I've led this properly, if I've shown it to you properly, it begs the question, well, if I'm not going to find something constant out here, where on earth am I going to find something constant? And the answer becomes the classic answer, doesn't it? If I'm going indeed, if the constancy isn't here, then it is we who must be constant. But we know of ourselves that of ourselves we can't be constant because we're constantly seeking something to help us be constant. Aren't we? Do you understand that? Constantly pursuing something by which to anchor ourselves in what we think will be a constancy, but it's never constant because the tides change. So the question is begged then, well, if it is we who must somehow or other be constant, then we must find within ourselves that which is constant. If we search for it anywhere else, we will be betrayed. Period. Now, unfortunately, and I mean that, when we hear that we must find within ourselves that which is constant, our minds immediately do what our minds always do the minute we hear something that has a resonating truth to it, that rings to something that we've understood before. Of course, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all else shall be added unto you. The kingdom of heaven is within you. God is in me. God is in you. And here's where you need a new level of honesty, because honesty and constancy go together, as you'll see. If I know that the kingdom of heaven is within me, if I know that this constancy is within me, where in God's name is this constancy when you're inconsiderate to me? You tell me that. And here's the answer. You can't find it. And the reason you can't find it is because you are at that moment caught up in trying to create constancy for yourself by controlling the condition that threatened your image of yourself. So then in all such moments where a person says, oh, I do, I love God, I love Christ, I love Jesus, Muhammad, whatever it is, the person clings to it and says, this is my life. The fact of the matter is that the only thing that's really constant about such a human being is how they turn to that when their life falls apart and shows its inconstancy. And what we're talking about here is finding a life that doesn't fall apart, because we're not attached to and identified with that which falls apart or with that which draws us into those relationships in this world, which is all up here we'll talk about, that produces the constant conflict we're in. Does it exist? So imagine, take a breath. Imagine three people walking down a forested... There's no forested road. Is there? Is there a forested road? Good. A road through a forest. Yeah, a forested road would have forests alongside the road. I knew that. And these three people, as they're walking down the road, and what we're talking about now, what do these three people have in common as they're walking down this road? Because what we're looking, are we not looking? See, this is hard. This is difficult to say. Because could anyone hurt another human being? Would it be possible to hurt another human being if you really shared in common that individual's life? I'm telling you, it would be impossible, in case it's not clear to you. It would be impossible. It would be impossible. So here are three people walking down the road. What do they have in common? What are these three people doing? And I'm going to have to walk through this in a little bit briefly now so we can see it. Here's three people walking down the road. Imagine you, myself, and another person walking down the road. Now, what do we share in common? What do we have in common in that moment? We do have in common the fact that a forest is around us, don't we? I mean, there's no question about that. There's a forest around us. You can't make there not be a forest around you. That's a physical, objective fact of the moment. Yes? What else is in common in that moment?
Our relationships?
No. What else is in common in that moment is that each person walking down that road has an awareness of their surrounding, of the forest. Each person has an awareness of the forest, meaning that everyone's walking along with their heads up because you gave them this exercise. You look around, okay? Now, that's where all things in common end. Because those three people will each have a completely different experience of what they are aware of. Go slow. Each person will have a completely different experience of what they have been made aware of. The awareness is in common, the forest they are aware of, that exists, but their experience of this awareness is entirely different. Ever been with three people someplace and one had a blast, one hated it, and one was absolutely ambivalent? Three completely different experiences to the exact same objective condition. How can there be three completely different experiences when we share the fact of the forest in common, we share the fact of awareness, we're walking, we can see, we share that in common, but our experience is completely different from each other? How is that possible? What?
I said, what's inside?
The answer is that our experience at any given moment is a product of what we are aware of. But here's where we have to go slow. Because really, most of the time, all we're aware of is what we're experiencing. Go slow. What we're aware of is what we're experiencing. And we're not experiencing what we're seeing. We're experiencing what our mind is telling us about what we see. Which means that when I'm walking down the street, road, if I'm one of those three people, what my mind is aware of is not the forest, but my reaction to being in a forest. Because I was raised by a father who hunted and I hated hunting. Or I was raised by someone who just loved to hug trees and I never understood the bark thing. You know, or whatever it is. No, please understand that these experiences are completely different. And not only are they different, but if you can see it because of the experiences being different, these three people can be in an argument over where they are. There's no argument amongst the trees and there's no argument about the awareness of the thing, but the individual's experience of that moment, which is not the moment itself, but what their mind is projecting that they're looking at and telling them they're seeing. This is a key point, you understand? They are seeing what they are giving themselves as an experience. How many of you understand that before I go on? It's very important. All right. So we relate to life and we relate to others through our experience of them.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
Now you say, well, what else should I relate to them through? Remember we talked about this? Is there something constant? Because my experience, my relationship with you or anyone else, if it's predicated upon my experience, and my experience tells me that I have to be afraid of you or that I have to get something from you or that you have something to give me, then in such moments, the whole of my experience has nothing to do with being constant and kind, does it? Because I'm being driven now to get something from you or to protect myself from you. So that I'm not simply seeing what is, it isn't a clear moment, it's rather a moment filled with a kind of confusion generated by a mind that is always telling the person who it's active in what it is that their experience is about. And this is how we live. And in case I haven't put it together in your mind yet, don't you understand how inconstant? Don't you see how inconstant that is? Even with each other. One morning you wake up and you look at your husband or your wife or your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your kid. Hi, baby doll. Love you. You know, isn't it great what we have? And 5 minutes later, because something on the TV reminds you of something that happened with your weird Uncle Al did or whatever it is, and suddenly you are seeing not the moment. You're not there anymore. Now you only see the experience you're having of it. And because of that, now you turn on the person. Because there's pain in you. And the pain is in you because you're looking at something that's filled with pain that has nothing to do with the image itself on the television, but rather with the content of the image your mind has put before you. Take a deep breath. Take a deep breath. This is so important to understand because I want to repeat this. If what I'm saying is so, and it is, that our lives the way they are now are predicated in a relationship in which every human being, take the three on the forest road and turn them into 30 billion. And you have three, whatever it is, and you have 6 billion human beings, none of whom have anything constant in common with anyone else, because whatever the condition is, it places up in their mind a conditioned response to it and sets the soul against the soul. Can you not see that? Now, just to add this, because it's worth mentioning, there are some constants, and we've seen them. That's part of what moves, draws us to it. You know, when you see a tragedy, and you see an overflowing of compassion or kindness pour out. Sometimes, you know, the tragedies bring out what we call the very best in a human being. But we're not talking about. How many of you can honestly say that when people are when there's a typhoon in your individual life that it brings out the best in you? It's more like, you know, throw them, you know, there's only room for one in the boat, and guess who it's going to be. So I'm asking you now to see first that the way we are, that we don't see what is, but we see what we are. We see everything through our own experience, and we call the awareness of our experience the same as the awareness of the event. And the awareness of our experience is not the same thing as the awareness of the event. The awareness of our experience is not the same thing as the awareness of the event. Because if we walk through a forest, we know the forest is. We know the forest has its own meaning. We know the forest has its own qualities, its own system. We know the forest lives unto itself. But someone will look at a forest and see nothing like that. So here's an objective truth about a forest, and here's a human being who sees only the objects that his or her mind gives them to see about the forest. Is that clear? Now, one says, well, what else is there? What else is there? How else can I see? And what else is there to see? And what would my life, and to the point, ultimately, and what would my life be like? How would I know, this is what people say, how would I know what to do if I didn't tell myself what to do in a moment? If I wasn't sitting there making these critical choices about how to control events, how would I ever have what I have? And by the way, I'll ask you to ask yourself what you have, other than a constant struggle between trying to control what is inconstant and constantly fearing that what you have controlled is going to fade away. So what else is there? And this is where it gets beautiful. Come wide awake. Just drop thought. Just drop it and bring yourself back into the room. If you're listening to this talk, just, and if you're driving, keep your hands on the steering wheel for heaven's sake, but just drop thought and come wide awake. Come into the room. Bring yourself into the room. Now, awareness, because we're talking about it. Have you ever been in a situation and you later found out that you were absolutely unaware of what happened in it? You know, like you got married or something. You fill in the blank. How can I be someplace and be unaware of what just happened? Because when I'm there, I don't think I'm unaware. So what is it that I am aware of when I'm there, if I'm not actually aware of being there? What I'm aware of, if you will, is what my mind is telling me the experience is about. I'm looking at, literally, something unfold in thought and feeling that is describing to me, just like, it'd be like, imagine sitting in a car, you would never do this, you sit in a car, you put a blindfold on, and you have someone read to you the road that you're on and what you should do as you're going. You would never do that, would you? But there's something in us that is constantly telling us, steer right, steer left, and it can't see. So is there in just what we'll call awareness? Because the point of this is that there's two kinds of awareness. There's awareness like when a person is actually where they are in a room, awake to themselves, to the whole. There's that awareness. Then there is the awareness that we're talking about, which is awareness only of what my mind is telling me the room is about. In other words, simple awareness. You don't have to think to yourself how to get out the door. Your mind projects the path. It tells you when to extend your hand to turn the doorknob. It indicates what to do with your balance when you're going down steps, because your awareness, your physical awareness, allows your motor skills to operate without you being present. But that kind of awareness has nothing to do with the kind of awareness that we're interested in, which is the following. Yes or no? We know that awareness of danger. Have you had a moment of danger, an awareness of danger? That in that awareness of danger, there's an instinctive preservation in the awareness of danger. Yes or no? And listen to this: without fear, in the moment of instinctive awareness of a danger, there is an immediate action on the part of the body. But it isn't until afterwards that you go, "Oh my God, that was scary." So awareness acts instinctually to preserve, and it does all of that without fear. Yes or no? So here's we're talking about the qualities of awareness itself. Not you and I, in quotes, making choices to do things, but awareness itself has that capacity. Yes or no? How about this? We know that awareness includes compassion, even self-sacrifice, and it does it all without self-consideration. If you ever really see someone, and here's part of the problem. See, when you see someone in their suffering, you don't see their suffering. You see what that suffering means to you. We only think in terms of relativity. We compare what that might mean or what it could mean or what I would get were I to answer that. But true awareness has none of that in it. True awareness never measures the self. If it sees something that's wrong, if it sees someone suffering, it sees something that's in danger, that awareness will act. That man or woman will act without considering themselves, because that's the nature of awareness. It has built into it part of its nature, its character, is compassion, is kindness itself. And I'm trying to point out something here. That means that there's kindness that I don't have to think about being its instrument. That means that there's an intelligence, a safety, a strength that I don't have to try to get my hands on that goes before me at all times, that I don't ever have to wonder whether or not I'm going to be okay physically. We know that awareness allows for there to be participation, relationship with whatever it is without separation. We know that. We look at awareness of a night sky. An awareness of a forest blanketed in fog. You don't have to think to yourself, can I be in relationship with what I see? Your awareness of the beauty or the darkness or the light or whatever it is, your awareness of that instantaneously participates with what you see. So the beauty of it, whatever it may be, you get to have that. But you didn't have to think to yourself, I want that beauty. You didn't think to yourself, how do I have constant beauty? The beauty was constant in what you were looking at, and your relationship through awareness granted you participation in it. How many of you can see that? And better than that, you participated without feeling like you were participating. Do you know what I'm saying? So many times we participate in stuff, and while we're participating, we're watching ourselves thinking, I'm participating. When is this going to end? Because this is too good and I don't want it to. So now you're participating in what? Are you participating in an event that's timeless in itself? Or are you participating in your experience of the event, which contains the opposite, which is the inconstancy? We also know that awareness itself allows, if you will, this touching. Awareness allows the embrace of that which is fathomless. We know that that awareness allows the touch of what is a great depth, and it does that without having to reach for anything. Have you ever been? And it is. These are all in scale. These levels of awareness, but they're all one thing. Have you ever not had a moment where for whatever reason, you're simply and suddenly aware of the fact that there is something greater and deeper and truer and more constant than yourself? This is the root of true spiritual experience. Everything else is a charade. There you are, and your awareness. Your awareness is not only allowing it, but your awareness of it and you in it are one thing. They're one thing. There's no you going, where is it? How do I get it? There's no you remembering some spiritual moment. There's no you longing for a spiritual moment. There's no you in it at all. There is awareness, and there is something that you, if you will, and I have to use the word you, are now experiencing that you didn't create. And because you didn't create it, that means it is constant. Have you not had that experience? Have you had a moment yet where a truth flashed in your mind and you realized that that truth had always been there, its depth, its breadth, its wisdom, its kindness, everything had always been right there, but you just had not been present to it? In those moments, where does that come from? It comes from the awareness that aligns the soul with the eternal truth that touches it. And all of this is to try to get across a very critical idea to you, which is that the way we are now, day in and day out, we are living from a nature that sees what it calls life, but doesn't know that the life it sees is nothing but the repeat performance of its own experience. That's all it lives. And it lives that because there's constancy of a sort in that for that nature. Because whatever it can continue, including its heartache and its anger and its resentments and its fears, whatever it can keep going, at least I've got that. Even though it's hell, at least it's constantly hot. Yes. Now, next point. How do we learn, in quotes, to look past experience? Because that's what we're talking about. How do we learn to look past experience so that I don't see my experience that calls itself the moment, but that my experience actually is one with the moment through this awareness that has all of these beautiful constancies in it without effort? Understand the question? How we learn to look past experience? Question. Have any of you ever seen through somebody else? No, I'm asking you. You know, you may not go, I see through you. But, you know, you're with somebody or you're with people, and one day, you know, you finally see through the person. Have you ever seen through someone? How many of you have ever seen through somebody? Okay. Now, are you Superman? No, I mean, I'm asking, it sounds silly, but when you say you see through somebody, what on earth does it mean? Well, the average explanation of I see through you would be that I have finally seen that the image you have of yourself isn't really you at all, and you're just a toad. Or worse, I saw it. All along, I thought you were Prince Charming or Princess Darling or whatever it was, and then I looked up and it was a werewolf or what. It was a monster. It was a monster in disguise who pretended that they had something in common with me so that they could have a constant sense of themselves through me giving them my life or whatever it might have been. And then one day, you see through them. Now, I'm asking you, what do you see when you see through somebody? What you see, now listen carefully because it's all to the point of what we're talking about, is you don't see through them. What you see through at last is your experience of them. And your experience of them was your conditioned thoughts, the images that they elicited in you through their pretense. How many of you understand this? So this is fantastic because it means that in the moment that I see through someone, what I've finally done is seen through this veil of thoughts that their actions produced in me quite calculatedly. Do you understand that? People who pretend to be something pretend for the calculated purpose of producing in your mind a certain series of pleasurable images. And then once those pleasurable images are established and you want the pleasure from them, you're not about to see through those things. You need them to be in constant relationship with the liar that they are that you don't know they are. So here I am, and I see through somebody. What does it mean? I finally saw through my own ideas about that person. And what does it mean, though, that I saw through my ideas about that person? Does it mean I'm judging them? No. It means that I'm no longer seeing their character portrayal. What I'm seeing is the actual quality of their essence. And in seeing the actual quality of their essence, there's no judgment in it. Because that kind of seeing, that kind of awareness, instantaneously, because it is in relationship without having to think about it, is instantaneously seen as not being something good for me, not desirable, not right. So there's no problem with letting go. You know why it's hard to let go? Because you don't want to let go of the sense of constancy you get out of hating somebody, if that's the case. So you see, we're talking about what it means to see past experience. Now, how do we do that? Uh-oh. How quickly I run out of time. Nevertheless, we're going to go forward. I'm going to tell you a story, so take a deep breath. Because it's an exercise as well. There was once a school of higher learning. And in the school of higher learning, the final test before they were able to go on to the next school of higher learning was that the student was placed over a beam, a long beam over a kind of gulf. And they were told that they had to walk across this beam. And when they were told this, most of them, piece of cake, I can walk across the beam. And they said, well, but he said, the teacher said, but there's one little extra bit here. And he pulls out this headdress with veils on it. He said, you have to wear the headdress of 1,000 veils while you walk across the beam. And now, it wasn't 1,000 veils. It was just one veil. Do you understand? A headdress with a veil. You've seen these things. You know what I'm talking about? Okay. Well, that's not so tough because it's a thin material. I can do that. How many think you can do it? You're on. You're gone. You're a graduate. You've done it. First student gets up, starts to walk across the beam. All the other students are watching them. He gets about 3 feet out all of a sudden, starts to lose his balance like this, and screams and falls off the beam. Now, because it's a spiritual school, he instantaneously appears on the side where he started. Because in his heart, he intends to be the right kind of man, right kind of woman. Some fall and don't show up back there. And they watch, and they think, just how many of you think, what's wrong with this guy? I mean, who can't do that? So he gets up, another guy gets up there, walks across, gets about 6 feet, all of a sudden he comes, just stops right in the middle of the beam, and stands there for like 15 minutes. Everybody's going, what's wrong with him? And all of a sudden, the fellow makes a right turn and falls off the beam. Next, a girl gets up there, a lady gets up there, starts to walk across, gets about halfway across, screams, and jumps off. Now, school closes for that day, and they all get together and they talk about it. And each one starts to say what it is that happened when they started to walk across the beam. And one student in particular, the one who in this instance we will hope is going to be you, who finally gets this and understands it, listens very closely because he has yet to himself walk across this. And what he hears is that as the person's walking across the beam, when they start walking, their mind is, let me ask you, what would you be looking at if you were walking across a high beam? You would either have your attention fixed out on an object in front of you, because that's the best way to keep your balance, or you'd be looking at a certain distance, maybe 8 feet in front of you at the beam. And everybody says, well, I started walking out. I had my attention out there. But the next thing I knew, and this one man said, the next thing I knew, there was a picture of my ex-wife on the veil. He said, it scared me. That's when I jumped. And the next person gets up and says, well, that's funny. I didn't see your ex-wife. But I did see that situation that happened when I was in grammar school when that teacher pushed me on, put me in the corner and started telling me that I would never amount to anything. I saw that, and that's when I stopped. And then I don't know what happened. Suddenly someone called me over on the other. I saw a picture of my friend on the other side of the veil, and I just turned and I walked off. And each person that got up in the class started saying that when they were walking across, they started with their idea that we're going to walk across, but that no more did they start walking than appeared on this veil some picture, an image, a movie, something of their life that so captured their attention that they completely forgot where they were and what they were doing. So the one student listened to this story and he began to think to himself, when I walk across now, I understand. And this, please try to put yourself, because whether you know it or not, I'm talking about you. Say, well, now I know what to do. I'm just when the picture appears, when I start to see what appears on that veil, I'm just not going to pay attention to it. And I'll walk across, piece of cake. So the next morning it's his turn. He gets up on the thing, walks about 8 feet across, makes a left turn and falls off. And this starts an extraordinary process for this young individual. Because what he begins to learn, as do all of the students, listen, who will get back up on the beam and try to walk across it, even though as they walk, everything in them, and this is to the point of it, everything in them, no more do they start to try to, now we'll translate this, be in the present moment. No more do they try to be aware and awake in that life with a capital L, in that light with a capital L, in that awareness. They try, but no more do they do that. Then boom, across the screen of their mind comes the thought, comes the emotional state, the resentment, the fear, comes the dream, comes the next thing that I've got to do, comes how great it'll be when I cross. And over and over again, that young man in this story, he'd get up on the beam and he would know. See, listen, he would start to know that he was going to see on this veil in front of his eyes, that he was going to see images whose very purpose was to distract him from being where he needed to be to successfully cross. But as he worked at it, he began to gather something in himself that you must gather, and it's the whole point of this talk. He began to understand what it meant to be able to look past experience. Because whether you know it or not, that's what you're a captive of. You're a captive of the ideas and the feelings and all of the things that whirl around in the mind that are stirred by everything taking place around you and the associations therein. And all the time a person, have you ever intended to say, you know what, I'm never going to be unkind again. Because I want to be a constantly kind person. Then how many of you succeed? You know why? Because no more do you set out than upon that veil appears all of the reasons why this person is different and this situation requires your fear and this one demands that you act out what you act out. Because you're not in the moment. You're not in the awareness that has the qualities that are constant like I'm talking about. You've got the headdress of 1,000 veils on. And here's the beauty of this, if it's possible to convey. You can sit right here in this room and look past experience. You can learn, you can sit in this room and you can actually see on this veil, on this mind, you can actually see the thoughts that come up and you can look right past the thoughts into the present moment. You can be aware of the thoughts instead of letting the thoughts tell you what to be aware of. Right now, all the time. Because you see, this is the thing. That awareness, that light, that intelligence, that expression of God's life, whatever word you want to use, it's never not renewing itself. It's never not the font, the very fountain of that which a human being longs for in their heart. It's never not that. But we're never in it because instead of being in it, we're in the world of our own experience. Listen to this, trying to protect ourselves from the very images that our own mind produces on the screen of itself. Trying to figure out how to get away. Can you imagine? Trying to figure out how to get away from what I see when what I see is me. Because that's what you see. That's the beauty of the possibility of a spiritual life. Because you see, you can learn to see, if you will, this moment by being it. You can learn to be awareness, not see awareness. You can learn to be aware. And to be aware means that awareness has become your life. That's the essence of what it means, that there is something that, it is. You see, that awareness is eternal. And we can even prove that if we're willing to look at it. That awareness is not only eternal, but that the very qualities that we're talking about that are constant and good and true and wise, that they're eternal too. And they've never not been in that awareness, and that awareness has never not been here now. Never. Always been here. But we have to be the one, and I return to the top of the talk because I only have a few minutes left. We have to be the one who understand that if I'm going to find that which is constant, not only am I going to have to find it, if you will, here in me, in my life, but I'm going to have to choose constantly to place its life before my own. That there's the rub, do you see? Because if I'm not present, then something is present in this veil that is not only presenting me the choices that I have to make, but as it gives me the choices, condemns me to relive the condition that produced that in the first place. That's a real definition, if you want, of reincarnation. Nothing changing except the way in which a person cries over the fact that they can't find the constancy that their heart longs for. So you do it. See, this is the thing, and I know I fail at this when I try to get across this beautiful idea to you. You can look past yourself. Right now. You can look past yourself. What does it mean to look past yourself? It means that I'm aware of myself, but I'm also aware of the objectivity of this room. I'm aware of what is here without thinking about it at all. And if my mind starts to draw me into, well, I looked at that person and they're not happy with me. What happens when you see, in quotes, someone who's not happy with you? You cease to see them. Do you understand that? You don't see their unhappiness anymore. You see your experience of what that's going to mean to you if you don't make them happy with you. So you sit there and you let all of this. I got 2 minutes left. This is a great example of this. Imagine for a split second. Take a deep breath. Imagine for a split second that you have a burlap bag. Big burlap bag. Hold it up. And on the other hand, you've got a wildcat by the tail. Now, what does one do with a wildcat when they have a burlap bag? You put that wildcat in the bag. Now, have you ever put a wildcat in a bag? No. But I can tell you that if you did, that bag would look like this. The bag would be jumping everywhere, and that cat would shred the bag, wouldn't it? But you can't let the cat out of the bag, can you? Meaning, I can't let this thought go unanswered. This feeling, it's got to be resolved. I got to get it in the bag and keep it in the bag. So you get another bag and you put the cat back in the bag. Let the cat out of the bag. Let the cat out of the bag. And if you do, what you discover is something that cannot be discovered any other way other than through the awareness of that. You'll see another cat appear in the bag that you didn't put in there. And then you'll see something and you want to stuff the bag down again. Let the cat out of the bag. Simply be aware of the cat and the bag, and that's all. Don't try to do anything with it. This is what it means. You look past. How many of you get this picture in your mind? That when no more, even while I'm talking, your mind is telling you what I'm saying. Why do you need your mind to tell you what I'm saying? Because that's the only way you presently know. And I'm trying to show you that you can know without thinking, and that knowing without thinking is the only way we will ever have anything truly in common with each other that doesn't cause conflict, that has no basis for war in it, because hatred only exists where human beings compare themselves to one another and come up short. So you see the difference? And do it tonight. Do it tonight when you get home. Do it in the morning. You do this every day. You're sitting at your desk. You're talking. Even when you're talking to somebody. I'm doing it too. I'm doing it all the time. I'm talking to you. It looks like I'm looking at you. You're in my mind. But that's not what I see. Learn what it means to see what is there on the veil, but to see past the veil. Because the veil's in time. Do you understand that idea? Your experience, all in time, everything that one thinks about is a product of their experience, which means it's the perpetuation of time in themselves. So that one is always looking at something in time. You can look at things. You can see through time to the timeless. Do you understand that? This present moment is timeless. This living light, this intelligence, it's eternal. You're in it. But you don't know you're in it, because instead of the experience, if you will, of being in that, you have the experience of yourself. So you can learn what it means. You do it right now. Do practice it. Look, come wide awake, and you can look right out of your own eyes, and you can see and feel everything about yourself, and you can also see that you're in a room. And that there's no need for you to know what to do at all about being in this room, or what you're hearing even. There's no need for you to do anything with even your own thoughts. But I want to ask you a question. When you have a thought and you have to think to yourself, what does that thought mean? Who in the heck's doing the thinking? Do you understand the question? Here's a thought, and I go, oh my God. Did I have the thought, or am I the one figuring the thought out? It's neither. It's a bag and a cat. Let it go. Learn what it means every moment that you can. To simply see past your experience. You get in a fight with somebody, a problem on the phone, hang up, and instead of being hypnotized by the veil and falling off the beam, sit and look straight out into eternity. Let the awareness that you're in give you the guidance that only it can give you, and it'll do it constantly.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.